Welcome to the Times of Israel's daily briefing. Today is Sunday, April 14th, day 191 of the war with Hamas, and the day after an unprecedented strike from Iran. Amanda Borchel, Dan here with our editor David Horowitz and military correspondent Emmanuel Fabian. Thank you both for joining me after a marathon news session last night.
Hey, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
Late Saturday night, Iran launched a large wave of some 300 attack drones and missiles from its territory toward the Jewish state in the first ever direct attack on Israel by the Islamic Republic, triggering air raid sirens throughout the country early Sunday as the military worked to intercept the Iranian projectiles. We will hear the play-by-play of the Iranian attack from Manny, and then David will weigh in on the international ripples. All this and much, much more when we're back.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Manny, let's start with you. When was Israel alerted of the incoming attack, and how quickly did we know of its nature and severity? So, essentially, just walk us through the timeline to begin with.
What happened was on late Saturday night, Israel was notified by the US that Iran had started launching drones at Israel. Like we've talked about before on the podcast, these drones take multiple hours to reach Israel. They are quite slow. So they were detected at an early stage and it allowed the army to prepare to intercept them. What happened was as the hours continued, we started seeing reports of these drones crossing Iraq, crossing Syria, nearing Israel. And then the Israeli Air Force and its allies, the United States, United Kingdom, even Jordan, and France as well, and other allies began to intercept these drones. This was ongoing, and then at some point during the drone attack, while these around 170 drones were making their way toward Israel, Iran launched cruise missiles and ballistic missiles. The cruise missiles have a shorter travel time, around an hour to reach Israel from Iran, and the ballistic missiles are very short, around 10 to 15 minutes to reach Israel. That is what set off all the sirens in Israel from around 2 in the morning, was these 120 ballistic missiles that were heading towards Israel. They were then, most of them, according to the IDF, 99% of them were intercepted by the Arrow air defense system, and a handful of them managed to bypass the Israeli air defenses, and some of them hit the Nevatim air base in southern Israel, which, according to the IDF, caused some slight damage to the infrastructure there, to some of the buildings, but the air base was running as usual. As far as I understand, the runway itself was not damaged at all in this attack.
Is the assessment that the Nevatim airbase was the goal or just a goal of the projectiles?
I think it was one of the main targets that Iran was trying to attack. As far as I understand, really, many of the ballistics missiles were heading in that direction. The drones and the cruise missiles, it's hard to say where exactly they were heading to because they were intercepted at a much earlier stage. It's important to note that the 170 drones and 30 cruise missiles, not one of them managed to enter Israeli airspace. They were all downed far from Israel's borders, both by the Israeli Air Force with its fighter jets and by the Americans and the British and other allies. The ballistic missiles is what managed to reach Israel and set off all the sirens here. So with those missiles, those were mostly targeting Nevatim. We know that shortly before the attack, or while the drones were being launched already, there was some adjustments that were made at Nevatim. The Israeli government plane known as Wing of Zion was taken up into the air, as far as I understand, to prevent it from being attacked or being targeted in this missile attack. But overall, for Israel, this was a success in managing to prevent any significant damage or harm to Israelis. We know that in the Negev, there was a young girl, 7 years old, who was seriously wounded after shrapnel from one of the missile interceptions over Israel crashed down on her home and seriously wounded her. But other than that, there were no injuries in Israel.
Was Jerusalem ever a target? There was a lot of flashy footage of the Dome of the Rock and the beautiful golden globe being lit up by all sorts of rocket fire or projectiles. What was happening there?
I don't know to tell you what the target in that area was specifically, but across the whole country, mostly in the south, but also in the north and in Jerusalem, people were able to see these flashing lights in the sky. And those were basically two things. One was the Israeli interceptor missiles, the Arrow missiles, being launched up into the sky to down these incoming ballistics missiles. And what many people saw falling down was just burning shrapnel from the interception. These ballistics missiles were intercepted in space, essentially, probably around 100 kilometers up in the air. There was some very interesting footage showing what that sort of looks like, where you could see in the sky this very purple-looking explosion, which is what an explosion looks like outside of the atmosphere, where there's very little oxygen there. So those were the sort of flashes that people could see, and the explosions that people could hear were the blast from the interception, but reaching people's ears several minutes later because of the distance that we're talking about. It's very sophisticated system to be able to intercept missiles in outer space, essentially. It's not the first time Arrow has been used. We've seen it used for the first time during the war previously. But this case was downing more than 100 of these missiles in a very short period of time. That is what people were seeing and hearing during the attack. Not drones, not the cruise missiles, but the interceptions of the ballistic missiles.
Our colleague Tal Schneider said that last night was the most expensive night in Israel's history because of the cost of these Arrow interceptor missiles. Can you give us some sense of the scope there?
As far as I know, the Arrow 3 interceptor missiles cost around $2.5 to $3 million each. And the Arrow 2 missiles, which also may have been used to down some of the projectiles, were they're around $1 million. And there's also all the cost of the fighter jets that were operating all the missiles that they used to down the drones and the cruise missiles that were heading toward Israel. I don't want to give an exact sum, but very, very expensive night for Israel and for the Americans as well. They were also involved in downing many of the drones that were heading toward Israel.
Right. The Americans were involved, and you mentioned several of the other partners. Can you break down a little bit more who lent a hand and what their roles were?
So the Americans and the British, with their fighter jets, managed to down many of these 170 drones. There isn't an exact figure yet. And Jordan has also reported that it, too, managed to down some of these drones using its air defense systems. Because these drones were essentially flying from Iran over Jordanian airspace toward Israel. So they had a role to play here. And additionally, the Americans were the ones who notified Israel first, their radar systems across the Middle East. Other nations in the Middle East with their radar systems were able to give Israel an advance warning. Israel obviously knew Iran was planning this attack for days. The exact locations and how many missiles and where exactly they're heading all aided Israel in being able to down many of them, and there was enough time. It's not like when rockets are launched from Gaza or from Lebanon, where there's only a few seconds. You know, people who live in Sderot, when the rockets launched from Gaza, they have 15 seconds. Israel had multiple hours for the drones and several long minutes for the ballistic missiles, which is plenty of time for it to be able to intercept them successfully, aside from a few which impacted at Nevatim, like we mentioned.
Everything was cleared rather quickly, and it seems rather effortlessly. So in your assessment, was this Iranian strike actually serious?
I think it was very serious. I don't think this was a symbolic attack. I don't think that launching 300 missiles and drones at another country would be something symbolic. The army genuinely believes that Iran tried to heavily damage the Nevatim airbase. For those who don't know, it is the airbase where Israel's F-35 fighter jets are housed. So that is an asset that Iran tried to go for. And I think the response that Israel will be considering now is based on what Iran tried to do, not what it managed to do. It didn't manage to do much. We know that, but there wasn't too much damage. But what it did try to do in launching 120 ballistic missiles and 170 drones and 30 cruise missiles, that's a very serious attack on another country. And Israel will consider its response based on Iran's attempt.
Manny, thank you so much for these updates. I'll let you go now.
Thank you.
We'll go to a short break.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. David, I know in our household, all seven of the kids, two parents, one dog, we're sheltering in our mamad, in our safe room, during the immense booming and flashing lights in our home outside of Jerusalem. What was it like for you in Jerusalem?
Well, it was, I don't think it was a different experience to anywhere else in the country for some of the reasons that Manny described, including the fact that you had the sense that something very close to you was going bang. But it turns out actually probably wasn't that close to us at all. But it was, you know, it was pretty strikingly loud. And I was, of course, was working, so I don't count. But I think everyone in Israel was having a pretty sleepless night. I do know some people who slept, you know, quite soundly through the whole story, but I think they were the minority.
We've given a lot of air to the potentially fraying ties between Israel and the rest of the world, but specifically the United States. But I think we're seeing from last night that a friend in need is a friend indeed. And it really appeared to me, at least, that the U.S. stepped up as well as other international countries. What is your assessment of this?
I think there's a lot of truth in that, and that it's not the entire story. In other words, this was a moment of tremendous significance. It's really quite staggering how rapidly we moved from potential major regional war to, okay, everybody, we're, you know, reopening the airport now, and, you know, you don't need to be near a safe space. I think that we would be foolish to assume that, okay, that's it, everything is going to be calm now for the foreseeable future. Plainly, allies stepped up. You know, Manny's been describing the very practical role that the United States played in giving Israel the early warning to supplement Israel's capacity to do the Air Force-related things and the air defense-related things. Other countries, too. I think Jordan's a very interesting story, given its geographical realities and its complicated strategic tightrope walking all the time. You could say that it's not surprising that Jordan would want to help intercept things that were flying over its airspace carrying large quantities of explosives. But still, you know, they're in a pretty vulnerable place. I also think, you know, you've seen other countries that did not provide practical assistance, nonetheless expressing support and denouncing Iran and so on. But there are limitations, right? The relationship with the United States is under strain. When the nation of Israel needed protection, the United States geared up well ahead of time, coordinated, assisted, was practically deeply involved itself, potentially deterred a further escalation. But already there are caveats. You know, we weren't in on the call that President Biden had with Prime Minister Netanyahu once all the incoming projectiles had been intercepted. But we understand that the president is not supportive of, well, as far as we can tell, of any kind of major Israeli response. And you know, that's potentially very problematic for Israel. Again, as you know, coming back to what Manny said just now, there could be no assumptions about Israel and its allies' capacity to essentially near hermetically prevent hundreds of projectiles, including cruise missiles and ballistic missiles, from doing any significant harm. We have one Bedouin girl seriously injured. We have minor damage at a significant military base. That's not what Iran would have expected would happen. And therefore, so what? Israel is meant to say, yeah, okay, we got away with that one. What a great success for Israeli defense. You know, I don't think so. And never mind what I think within the coalition, and I'm not sure that it won't be quite widely across the coalition, there will be a sense that, no, this is an equation that Iran does not get to change. In other words, if the Iranians are saying, hey, you targeted our territory, in terms of the embassy compound in Damascus 2 weeks ago when you killed several of our senior commanders, I digress and stress commanders of the IRGC al-Quds component, who are responsible for fostering violence and terrorism against Israel. But Iran wants to say that it's changed the equation. You targeted our territory, albeit an embassy compound in Damascus, so we've targeted yours. That's not something that Israel's going to be easily able to swallow without a response, because what happens when there's another prime essential or deemed to be prime essential target? I think the United States has argued that, you know, don't do that kind of stuff without telling us first. That's something that's already slightly interesting in terms of Israel's, you know, robust assertion down the decades, we can defend ourselves by ourselves and so on. You know, it's not going to be easy for Israel to say, well, okay, we'll consult with the Americans about what would hitherto have been seen as sort of tactical military operations. But the wider question, you know, if the United States is not supportive of an Israeli response to something that the Iranians would like to claim has changed the equation and therefore would place Israel in a position of greater vulnerability going forward, that's pretty problematic.
As mentioned, all the educational frameworks have been closed for the next several days. And as my wise daycare leader for my 2.5-year-old son said, I just feel that Iran has already won because we're all scuttling off into our different little houses. We're all sheltering. We're hysterical, all of us. And Iran basically stopped the nation. How do you feel about that kind of attitude?
Well, I think there's some truth in that. I mean, you know, even before the few hours of wary concern or worse, there have been several days when, because Iran had said, you know, we're gonna avenge this strike in Damascus, it did cause immense consternation in Israel. I don't, you know, maybe there was panic somewhere in Israel or in lots of places in Israel. I didn't see it. I'm not aware of panic. But I'm certainly aware of consternation and wariness. And, you know, really bad people have told you that they're about to attack you. Now, this is a really lousy neighborhood. And I think, you know, Israelis since October the 7th have not regained the sense of security that they had before that morning in terms of the military's capability to protect and defend us. So I actually think, to some extent, what happened overnight and the capacity of Israel and its allies to keep the country almost completely free from harm against a really major and unprecedented onslaught will have restored a little bit of Israeli sense of security. But nonetheless, you know, the really bad people to the east threatened and we were concerned and then fired and we were very concerned. And I don't think that's something that can be shrugged off easily.
David, thank you so much for your insights today.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Please check out another installment tomorrow. If you have any comments or questions about this or any other episode, please drop us an email to podcast@timesofisrael.com. This episode was produced by the Podwaves. Until tomorrow, shalom.